the seasons change when we get off our ass collectively and make a change. You know, we're not just the playthings of others. We are independent, free spirits, minds, and brains, and hearts, and souls, and conscience. We have responsibility to ourselves, our children, our grandchildren, wives, husbands, lovers, parents. Not to forget a sacred responsibility to our forebears, who after all created us and bequeathed to us wonderful traditions and the most vibrant civilization known to man in the history of mankind. And we are trading off, basically we're trading off our birthright virtually for nothing. You can't even say we're trading it off for a pottage, trading it off for nothing, maybe just for temporary relief from the constant assault of these Trojan horse, fifth columnist, Zionist infiltrators into our culture. And it is because we have been dumbed down and beaten down to the point where we don't even know ourselves what we are all about. We know more about Jews and Zionism than we know about Aryans or Europeans. And one of my collaborators, a young man who grew up with me virtually since he was a baby, he said, listen, I know much more about Zionism and Herzl and Menachem Begin and Sharon than I know about our own people. And that's the truth. You know, we have become, in our defense of ourselves, immersed in our enemies' culture and in their drive and their ethnic agenda, to the exception of our own.
It is very clear globally to anybody at all aware politically that your incarceration was a desperate act. What was it really that the Jews wanted to accomplish by doing this? Do you know?
Well, there are certainly indications in the Jewish media and pronouncements and actions by different Jewish groups that indicated what the heck I kind of walked into. And I believe that if it had not been for the events of 9/11, when America was attacked in New York City and in Washington, I do not think that I would be in Canada today, that I would be in prison today, that certainly I would not be in solitary confinement, and nobody would ever have called me a terrorist or a threat to the security of the Canadian people or the Canadian state. So that event of 9/11 had a comet's tail of effect. And you, being my wife, you know that we sat together on our bed and I said, Ingrid, we have just seen the end of an era. From now on, it's going to be a totally different world. And the old America, the old Canada that we grew up in and that we lived, is gone forever. And you know, that I should be the prophet of my own fate has often haunted me in my prison cell. In other words, that event is really the key to why I am in here. And since I refuse to suspend my critical thinking, not only relating to the Holocaust, to Zionism, to the Jewish agenda globally, especially in before, during, and after World War II, I also did not suspend my critical thinking when I came to America, because I saw no sign when I entered the United States that said, Ernst Jundl or other immigrants, check your brain at the door. It didn't say that. You know, in America especially, it is a sacred duty to defend the United States, to defend its constitution, which guarantees newcomers and residents, people who were born and those who were naturalized. It gives them inalienable rights, and that constitution, every person that lives in the United States is asked to defend it and what it gives to the people. And I took that very seriously because I have always, and you know that, I've always said that the Constitution of the United States, the United States governmental setup, was one of the most inspired ever thought of by Ned Bard Nunn.
I remember that. That was the very first tape I ever heard of you, and I've been looking for it ever since. Yeah. It is someplace. I know.
I have always said that not even in our own German history, and certainly not the British, and Bloody Mead, or when they got the Magna Carta going and so on, ever had as complete a vision and a separation of the duties of man to the state, man to God, if you want, man's role in the universe and in the setup of things, as they did in 1776, when these men, these early American framers of the Constitution, got together. And if America was living up to that document, which is still on the books, even though generations have been watering it down and have been allowed to have it trampled on, if America were only to go back to basics, to go back to those few thousand words, the world would be a much different place, and America would be a much kinder and a much fairer place, and I would be at your side at this moment, and we would not need to do this interview.
How do you interpret the abandonment of the Holocaust as a political strategy and trying to paint you as a white supremacist when that is the last thing on earth that you are? They must have known that they had no case. Why did they do this? This makes no sense to the common observer.
Oh, it makes eminent sense if you are a Zionist and if you are frightened out of your wits, because the world is waking up to the Holocaust having been the most diabolical lie and instrument of extortion ever thought of in history. And because I stumbled into the minefield as a young man, and like a dog grabbing a bone, ran with it and never let it out of my mouth again, I basically became to them the threat. I am a threat to their lie and to their extortion and con man system that they have imposed on the world. And I don't know if you remember, but I certainly remember that the Anti-Defamation League of Cyprus in the United States announced that they were going to change their focus away from the Holocaust. It was before 9/11. It was almost a year before. It was about January or Christmas in the year 2000, that they were going to change their emphasis and their focus, and it was very clear why. We had beaten them, we had exposed the racket, and because of the internet, it was becoming rapidly, globally known, and they knew they were, what they were doing was dumping ballast. The Holocaust extortion racket was threatening to sink them, because it was exposing them as shakedown artists for the whole world. And there is, the internet has been replete ever since that time with exposes of the frauds that they've committed. And we have Finkelstein, we have other Jewish authors that have exposed this exactly for what it is. Even Raoul Hilberg, the man who testified against me, was railing against the way the World Jewish Congress was shaking down the Swiss, shaking down the Austrians, shaking down German industry. And they even went after IBM and Ford and Red Hall, Red Hoos, Ticket, you know. But in the meantime, they were on a roll, and they thought this was one more time that they could fleece the Goyim. And I being the one that had sent Leuchter to Auschwitz, to Majdanek, and later on to the other camps, coming back and exonerating the German people, forensically, I incurred their wrath. And so, why do they go after me for being supposedly a white supremacist? Because I have, of all the revisionists, the greatest brand name recognition. Now, there are many revisionists that are far superior in intellect to me, and in knowledge to me, and in detailed understanding than I am, because I have been sick and tired of that disgusting, macabre issue, the bean counting and the bone counting and the ash counting. For the longest time, as you know, I was tired of the Holocaust, yet I am useful to them, because now that they have gotten me in solitary confinement without access to the media, unable to speak to anybody out there, they can say anything they want about me and get away with it.
And they do. And they do. Remember that last editorial in the Toronto Star? Nothing but sneers, nothing but lies. And yet, they do it. You know, I'm always amazed. I have been working this now for something like 9 years or so. I'm always amazed at the audacity that they will say the same lies over and over again, even though they know they are lies. But yet they will do it.
I was just before I got on the phone, I was studying the transcripts. The transcripts of the CSIS spy agency representative who said he had visited the Tunnel site. That's what is in his transcript.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that means, and he says, oh, and that site is very, what is he called?
Anti-Semitic, probably, huh?
No, he didn't say that, because he said active.
Oh, active.
That site is very active. So we're talking here, March 2003.
Mm-hmm.
So, you see, and he says that they have been investigating me. Inception of CSIS, which is 1984. So, 20 years these people have been investigating me, and obviously by the documents that they're heaving in my face, they have inherited from the RCMP Security Service or whatever it all was, other documents. So they have my story from the very first day that I was ever visited by the very first Mountie in 1962. So I'm the most X-rayed, exposed, surveilled, examined, telephone bug, mail open person in Canadian history.
Probably on the continent of America.
There is no secret. Like, no. And one of the guards here, his brother, worked in a credit card company. And he said, oh, he remarked once to him that he had seen my credit card. So that means everybody, like the intelligence agencies, they see my credit card. They know what hotel I slept in, how much I spent for a meal. They know my OHIP charges. They know the prescriptions my doctor made, because it's all electronic. It's all stored. The reason why I'm in here, my dear wife, is because they know by withholding from me medical treatment that I was taking, they basically will hope to wear me down and basically kill me. You know, this is not some alarmist statement. They know exactly what they're doing by denying me my choice of medical treatment. So if people will say, oh, that guy, you know, he's got persecution complex, well, let me tell you, after several bombs, a couple of arsons, arrest, a year of solitary confinement, and other little shenanigans, I think that the chances are, as my shrink said here from the prison when they accused me of being suicidal, no, you're not crazy. You have reason to think that people are after you. So that's the prison doctor, you know.
Yeah. It's scary. It's scary to me.
Well,
but I know what, you know, we have both thought it without talking about it. We know that.
It's scary to you, it's scary to me.
Yeah.
And I'm away. Actually, I'm surprised every morning when I kind of open my eyes and I'm not next to St. Peter, that I'm still here. I said the confinement cell, I said, oh, geez, wow, amazing, I'm still here. Another day. No, but to go back to saying, why did they call me this guru? Because you know from your knowing me and from your studying of me that the demonization and the American political scientist Laird Wilcox called it the ritual defamation of a person, which is like a ritual slaughter of a kosher slaughter by a rabbi with Ismael in the cow. It's no different, except they're doing it to a personality, to a person's reputation, but the death is as real. So when you just remarked upon the Toronto Star editorial about me, which was it was not exceptional. It was one and the same character assassination and ritual defamation of an innocent who cannot defend himself. That's basically what it was.
And yet, in the wake of that editorial, I had a reporter call me, and he said he had the hardest time finding anybody in Canada who said something negative about you. The people in Canada don't feel the way the media does. Everybody knows that.
All I can say to that is that hopefully you will forgive me the comparison. Those people were able to crucify Christ against the bitter judgment of even his judge, Pontius Pilate.
True.
You don't have to be guilty
in order to be crucified. True.
Be crucified. Our own German leaders can sing a long song of that. You know, they killed our elite by the same method. Actually, when I compared my treatment for the last year and then go back another 35, 40 years in Canada, it is one turn of the thumbscrew after the other on the torture rack, and the treatment that they have now written into the legislation in the Canadian anti-terrorism laws and the United States Patriot Act are super Nurembergs. You see, in Nuremberg, they had to still have these fake affidavits, you know, where they, for instance, say that the Germans were guilty for the murder of the Poles in Katyn. 4,400 lying affidavits, but they at least had to bring affidavits. Now, I don't see an affidavit. There's nobody that signs an affidavit. The judge huddles together with the prosecutors and 10 other Dracula-looking government lawyers in a secret office someplace, and they tell this man who was in charge of overseeing the Zündel file when he was in charge of cases as the former Solicitor General, they're telling him what I am all about. I don't know, as far as I know, every former girlfriend, every former wife, every former Jewish community activist that has ever been defeated by me in a political debate or on an interview now sharpens its claws and digs their claws into my back, exposed that I cannot defend myself. I don't even know they're doing it or saying it. In the age of digitization, they could have me make love to hold on my ear.
Don't say that.
It would. You know?
Yeah, I know.
They could say
it. Probably do.
So exactly what I'm saying. It is disgusting what is happening, and I am shocked that hundreds of Canadian parliamentarians, all of them lawyers, all of them paid at a great expense to be put through law schools and through universities, would write and then vote for the adoption of such laws that allows for secret evidence, secret witnesses, secret testimony in camera with no appeal.
True.
With no appeal. It is far worse than Nuremberg.
Right. And it is precedent setting, and they know it. That's why they push so hard. Now, here's a very important question. There are many indications that patriots in Germany will force a Holocaust trial number 3 in case they deport you back to Germany, you know. Now, what is your interpretation?
If the time comes and it needs to be done, I will accord with myself as I've always accorded with myself. But Europeans don't need to know the truth about the Holocaust. The truth about the Holocaust has long been out and is known. All thinking people know that they don't need one more Holocaust trial. You see what I mean?
You know, and I mean, the government might need it to be kicked out.
Also, the German media is so beholden. It is so tightly reined in. It's even more censored than the Canadian media, and the Canadian media takes the cake. The Canadian media is now so tightly locked up due to the private ownership of different networks, monopoly ownership of various newspapers and so on, that there are virtually no voices. You see, we can rail about why, for instance, journalists like Peter Worthington don't say anything, you know?
Eric Margolis.
Well, we know people like Eric Margolis, fine journalists with conservative background that know me for 30 years, 35 years. The point is, even you are an editor, for God's sake. You know that the finest article by Eric Margolis that could blow the lid off this whole thing could come to the desk of the editor-in-chief of the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Sun, the Toronto Star. Somebody would nix it.
Sure.
So it's not, we have to be careful that we understand this. You know, people write to me in jail and say, you should write Peter Worthington, you should write this person, and you write this person. I write my fingers sore. But the fact is, these poor guys, I remember once getting an article in the unedited article about me by a very well-known Canadian journalist during the time in my Holocaust postdoc. I think it was the finest piece of journalism that I have seen. It was honest, fair, balanced, Jewish side, got all kinds of things that I could say. It never saw the light of day. And that journalist never again covered my trial.
That's right. That's exactly what's happening. I know.
Good. I know that you have these voices. There are people who come to you from Europe. When you read those things on the internet, and it sounds so nice, and I pray to all the gods in heaven that Europe will shake off this monkey from its back and will free itself. But believe me, you, my wife, sweetheart, you will be disappointed one more time by seeing how tightly they lock up that courtroom in Germany if and when I get sent there.
Well, let's see. I'm always, on these things, I'm more optimistic than you are.
Yeah. You're a person without guile, and that's what makes you sweet and interesting to me. But at the same time, I am an old battle axe. I have so many Holocaust trials under my belt. I can tell you that there is nothing new that I could give the German people. They had their chance when we forged the Leuchter Report, and they did not take it. That whole political culture in Europe, I think that the rest of Europe will have to shake the Germans and literally grab the Holocaust lollipop from their hands. They're hanging on to it for dear life. They've gotten so used to the arsenic that they think it's aspartame.
Okay. How do you interpret the extraordinary fear the Jewish lobby projects at this time? We have, on one hand, hubris. They are bragging all over the place who they are, what they have accomplished, that they're firmly in the saddle, and so on. And yet, underneath their rams, a trembling. How do you interpret that? Is that a bad conscience, or is it that they have no conscience and they see the writing on the wall, or what is happening?
Combination of all.
Okay.
In other words, if you look at their Jewish papers, which you know I do regularly, all you have to do is take two of the Canadian Jewish news and the Jewish press in New York. You want to see paranoia? Yeah. I mean, these people, they take the cake.
They spook easily. We have often talked about that.
And Jewish leaders are making maximum use of that. On the one hand, some of them brag how powerful they are and what influence they have, and certainly the neocons. They are lying America into this disastrous Iraq war have proven that they have influence, power, and can persuade the president. We know that, Raimondo with the antiwar.com and so on, they've always said that. But the thing is that they have a fear. The fear is justified. There is 1,300,000,000 Muslims that they have agitated, embarrassed, have made lose faith, and are vilifying on a daily basis. England, that's 58 Muslim countries with huge economic clout, nations, and peoples, and religious blocs sooner or later will coalesce. And the big fear for those people is that they are like jugglers, you know, they've got six or seven balls in the air and they are afraid they're going to run out of hands.
Sure.
And so there is not enough Jewish fingers to plug all the holes in the dike. And I'm here, I've got time to wait. So if that's what they're having in mind for me, I can see their position erode every day.
We do too here on the internet.
Every day.
Very true.
You will be without a husband for a little while longer, and history will catch up to those people. Believe me. But in the meantime, it would be nice if we could be together and live our lives. You and I both know we never bargained for this, and it is a bummer, and we are basically two little people. You're talking about a David against a Goliath situation. They're not even David's, for God's sake. We're like the ant under David's sandal, you know?
Yeah, you have always said how ironic it is that two German-born or German-descending people stand between freedom of speech and terrorism, so to speak. You know,
the great irony is that in Canada, they have denied citizenship for 45 years. And what comes with citizenship? And yet, I have struck down through my little circle of friends, these old World War II pensioners from all sides, these pernicious laws, and I am once again stepping into the ring to do exactly that with these anti-terrorism laws. And I basically do it because it's a quirk of fate, it seems, that has kind of dealt me these cards, because frankly, the Canadian population get the newspapers that they deserve, they get the police that they deserve, they get the spy services that they deserve, and they get the government that they deserve. And so, is it really up to me, the guy that isn't even deemed to be fit to be a citizen and now suffers the ultimate insult of solitary confinement, being blamed to be a threat to the security of this country, is it up to me to sink the anti-terrorist legislation and make it conform? Am I the great teacher of the parliamentarians to say, you idiots, you should have been passing these laws to be confirming or conforming to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms? It's perverse. And it's the same in the United States with you and me there.
What then is the essence of your case, Marlon?
The essence of the case is that they have not a leg to stand on, so they're trying to railroad me with concocted evidence, guilt by association, and they do it behind closed doors because their evidence could not face the light of day, the scrutiny of, never mind the media, the scrutiny of a lawyer and a decent judge. That's why they have to do it in secret. And it's not for national security. There is nothing that I have ever done that threatened the national security of Canada, you know.